So some astounding things happening in education, and this is really remarkable. We had a chance to cover this briefly on the program. Gosh, it was probably a couple months ago. I think this happened back in June, and I couldn't believe it when it happened. And I know when I talk to people now, no one's ever heard of this, or very, very few people have ever heard of this. And even when you tell them, they just simply don't believe that it happened, which is the way I felt when somebody told me. It's like, no, this really possibly couldn't be the case, but it is. And David Murata here to tell us about it. David is the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratahonmoney.com, about the Universal School Choice Program in Nevada. Happy days are here again.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that with all of the move towards socialism in medicine and in single payer and all kinds of things like that, that we have the first state to have universal school choice in Nevada. And as I understand it, the way it works is that each student gets a debit card, and 90% of the money that would have been spent on them in the public school system is given to them in quarterly installments.
Or 100% if you're below a certain threshold.
Right, or 100%. Disadvantaged students actually get more and can spend that anywhere. And it ranges from between, they're estimating it starting a year from now in the fall, and they're estimating it's going to be around $5,100 to $5,700 a year that they can take to any school in Nevada and get whatever education they want. They can do public school, in which case it goes to the public schools. They can do charter school. They can do private school. They can even do homeschooling and get that that money for their homeschooling education online. They can even split it between, I'd like to take one class at the public school, and I'd like to take this class online, and then I'd like to be homeschooled for this portion.
It is a fantastic and exciting thing that's going on right now in Nevada, and I'm hoping that it will come here, although judging by who's running the state right now, it'd never get signed into law. But, you know, I think this could almost be a market attractor. And I remember thinking this aloud when I first discussed this thing, is that, you know, this is the sort of thing, this sort of innovation that may actually draw people, families, to move into Nevada.
I've always wanted to run a school, given what the government is paying for school systems and how bad some of them are. It made me want to move to Nevada just to start a school to be part of this program. That's how exciting I thought it was, because education is often done poorly. It often isn't run well. The administration isn't run well. Some of the teachers who are really good are burdened under the way that that schools are run.
Yeah.
And all the incentives are usually in the wrong direction in a school system, because you have a captive audience and because you have captive funding. There's very little market incentives to do anything well. And incentives is really what matters. It matters whether or not you have the incentive to excel and innovate. And reputation is not a good enough reason. You actually have to have monetary incentives. So I heard a great quote by Milton Friedman in which he said, I don't believe that private schools are better than public schools. I believe that market schools are better than monopoly schools.
Yeah, what a brilliant, brilliant comment. We're talking with David Murata about this new universal school choice in Nevada. Elliot is with us on the line. Hey, Elliot, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Thanks for having me on. I just want to comment about this universal school choice. I was at UVA studying economics, and there was a course, it took two of them, in the economics of education. And we had to prepare a final paper on the proposal. And universal choice had been in a few cities in the country, in poor cities. I know in Alabama had some, Tennessee had some. But we need to give some credit to a name that most people haven't heard of, and that is Brian Sandoval, the governor of Nevada. You know, people talk about Scott Walker and the way he took on the unions in Wisconsin. What Brian Sandoval is doing with universal school choice is revolutionary, and I hope it follows itself all the way up to the top, the same way that, almost in the way, but the alternative, the way SOL has turned into a poor model for No Child Left Behind and now Common Core. I hope we see the opposite effects, but to the same degree with universal choice. I think one of the biggest problems we have in education is the parties involved are blaming everybody else. Parents blame the schools and the kids. Kids blame the parents and the schools blame the other two. But with choice, there's no one left to blame. A parent has to choose. A child has to speak up, and the school is ultimately going to be responsible to to the other two parties. Finally, you've got something where people can't blame anymore. And I hope Virginia does get around to it. But like you said, with the people in there today, I don't know if that'll be for a while. But hopefully Brian Sandoval and the model in Nevada does spread. Just wanted to comment and, speak that this has been going on in a few cities. But finally, we have something to watch as a model going forward.
Absolutely. And Elliot, thank you so much for your comments. Let's get a response in our final minute here before we go to the break, David.
Yeah, I think Elliot and anyone who knows anything about economics knows that most of the arguments against school choice and against choice in free markets in general just don't hold water, that they're filled with assumptions about the altruism of and the infinite knowledge of people to decentralized planning. And we don't actually look at the forces that are in place and the incentives that are in place in the school system. I heard it said that the incentives that are in place in the current school system are like rubber bands, and no matter how hard you try to do school reform, the incentives simply pull them back into the alignment for where the incentives are, so that even the best reformers are pulling against these rubber bands, and the minute that person, by the force of their will, can no longer, they move on to another job, all the incentives pull the school system back into its mediocrity and in the wrong way. And so really what we have to do is we have to put the incentives in the right place, and that's what school choice does. It gives them to the parents, who have every incentive to make sure that their child has a good education.
We're going to get back to this. There's so much more to say about universal school choice now, the law in Nevada. And when we come back on the other side, we can also take your calls. Love to get your opinion of this. It is 977-1070. Ellie stands by. You can hold through or call us back right after the news and weather at the bottom of the hour here on 1070 WINA. Stay with us. It's the one and only AP award-winning Shilling Show. Thanks for joining us here weekdays from noon to 2. Coming up in the next hour, Supervisor Ken Boyd will be talking about economic growth in the county and also this incessant push for more and more and more government. It's sickening, really. Right now, we continue with David Murata. He's the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratahonmoney.com. And we're talking about universal school choice, as has now been signed into law. Yes, it is law in Nevada. Really remarkable. And what great news it is for freedom-loving people. And I know the people that don't like this typically could be classified as statists or people who don't believe in individual autonomy. Let's go to the phones and say hi to Greg. Hey, Greg, you're on with David Murata. Go right ahead.
Hey, David, Robbie took the words out of my mouth, autonomy. But anyway, the upper echelons in the universities and Department of Education sit around and basically pontificate these esoteric cogitations. In other words, they're smarter than us, so they come up with some sort of thing that the general public wouldn't understand because they're smarter. And then they don't have to tell everybody. We just need to send them our money to the Department of Education and the state. And then whatever policy they come up with, convoluted policy they come up with, we need to accept. And in the meantime, they're promoting social justice, socialism, fairness, collectivism, and not actually teaching young people how to survive and get out there and get a job and compete. They don't promote autonomy. They promote dependency. And I just think this needs to change. I think it's wonderful that what Nevada's doing, but I think that the Department of Ed needs to be gotten rid of, and then maybe they won't interfere with this in the future, because I have a feeling they'll try to interfere. But I'll just sign off and listen to what David has to say.
Okay, Greg, thanks very much. That leaves the line open at 977-1070. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of people who are hoping that this experiment in Nevada is an incredible failure, mm-hmm. And they're really hoping that it fails. I'm sure we're going to get a ton of stories coming out of Nevada where they'll take the absolute worst public school teaching crazy religious ideas, and they'll try to mock it up as see, this is what public school choice is all about. And again, to reiterate what we said about for the quote from Milton Friedman, I don't think that private schools are always better than public schools. I think that market schools will be better than monopoly schools. And I think that's an important distinction, because a lot of people are worried about, well, where's the centralized planning? How are we going to study this? How are we going to figure out which schools are working and which schools aren't? How are we going to do a report card on that? And no one really asks the question, well, how are those report cards doing now on the public schools and what's going on there? But what we do know is that if a school is failing, the first person to know is the student and the second person to know is the parent. So what we're doing is we're crowdsourcing all of those studies to all of the students and all of the parents to find the situation that actually fits their situation the best. And that's amazing because that is the enabling and empowering of the education system that we've never had before. And I will tell you, because I've had experience with my own children in multiple school system environments, and I've talked to a lot of parents. Most parents assume that their children's school experience is okay, mm-hmm. even good, because to think that it's not is too terrifying and horrifying because there's nothing that they can do about it. And so most parents assume it's okay and they're doing fine, and sure, they've got a few problems here and there, but it's not that bad, because to think it's that bad is terrible. And I just want to say from my experience, it is probably worse than most parents know, because there's a captive audience and the incentives are in the wrong direction. And if nothing else, just the environment of a lot of school systems provide an easy opt for failure. So, for example, a homeschool student who is, you know, blitzing through the math material 90% of the time and 10% of the time needs to slow down and say, hold on, I'm not getting this concept. Let me take twice as much time mm-hmm. for it. When they're put into most school systems with bells and whistles and teachers moving at a monotonous pace, it means 90% of the time they are bored silly and 10% of the time they're failing because it's not slow enough for them. And so to not have that individualized education for a student means that they're going to be failing 10% of the time and they're going to be bored 90% of the time because it's not moving at their pace. And school systems that can innovate and have a better methodology for dealing with their students will attract more students. And that crowdsourcing will help those kinds of methodologies have an incentive to do well. Whereas currently, if you introduce that, well, it's just more work.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not doing things the normal way. And the best way in school to get shot down is to not do something the normal way, because well, they have those weird ideas, and then all it takes is one student who fails in that class of doing a weird idea, in which people will say, well, you didn't use the right methodology, mm-hmm. and so therefore we're going to fire you. And the same thing is true of the students. Try doing something innovative and turn it into a teacher. A good teacher will say, hey, I see that you tried to do something innovative and creative. It kind of worked and it kind of didn't, but I'm going to take that into account because you tried something new. And so I'm going to give you a good grade. Whereas a bad teacher and most teachers will say, you didn't do what the assignment asked you to do, and I'm going to fail you for trying something new, even though it was brilliant and genius.
You know, David, the mechanics of all of this is super interesting because these are referred to as education savings accounts. And if that sounds familiar, it reminds me of my HSA, my health savings account, which gives me great incentive to not overspend, because after all, that's money out of my pocket, not some faceless insurance executive. And so let's talk about the mechanics of how these things work. So at the beginning of the year, they give you like a card that will go to the parent, and they have the certain amount of money on it, between $5,000 and $6,000, they're estimating. And then how is the process from there? I mean, what are the checks and balances on the use of the money?
Yes. So the first thing is, it's the only school choice model to date that currently puts downward pressure on prices. Because if you don't use it this quarter, you can use it next quarter. And so you can actually save unused funds for future education expenses.
And you can roll over from year to year.
And you can roll over from year to year.
You don't have that year-end, oh, hey, I've got $5,000. I spent, you know, $4,200. I have $800 to blow here before the end of the year, or I'm going to lose it. No, it doesn't work like that.
Right. There's no use it or lose it. So yeah. There's every incentive to be careful with your expenditures and only buy things that you think are actually worth the money. And that's one of the dangers in this whole thing, is because money is now being thrown around in more places than just the monopoly of public schools, that some people will try to jack up prices mm-hmm. because now there's easy money. And so, oh, gosh, I was charging this because I knew the market would bear that out of pocket. Now there's an extra $5,000. Let me jack up prices. And now all my private schools will just cost $5,000 more, and I'll make more money. And that's where the incentive of marketplace, someone else will come in and say, that's just unfair. We can do it for half that and be able to compete with them. So that's the first sort of incentive that's in place.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is the funding is distributed quarterly, so you can't run out of money by blowing it all up front. It's it's measured out a little bit at a time.
Okay.
So while there's incentives to save it, there's also incentives to have it when you need it. And then parents have to provide receipts for expenditures to the state. So there is some accounting, so the state will know what it's going for, and they will know that these are legitimate expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can go out and buy books, then you can go out and buy books, but you can't go out and buy anything you want. So there'll be some checks and balances there. And then you can use it on an a la carte basis, so you can get something from the public schools if they've got a great chemistry program. And my impression is that public schools will morph into doing what they do best, which there are many things that public schools do best because they've got the money to be able to have
nice labs.
Yeah,
and
huge
like
chemistry
that, right.
labs, and they've got AP tests down, and they've got really good courses for that, and that they won't do what they don't do well. And there's a whole host of that. And my impression is that under public schools, disadvantaged students get the worst deal because they pay just as much as everyone else, and no one really cares about the disadvantaged schools in public schools. Everybody's worried in these school choice programs that schools will not care about disadvantaged students either, but they're already getting a terrible deal. They're not in AP chemistry. They're not in AP English. They're put into tracks in junior high that railroad them into the worst courses that teachers don't want to teach. So you get someone fresh out of teaching school, and it's their first time in a classroom, and they're with students who don't want to learn, and they don't know how to motivate them. So instead, what I think you'll get is you'll get some schools who say, we are going to focus on students who need help. We're going to be a remedial school, mm-hmm. and we're going to gear everything toward that, toward trying to make those students the most successful. Because those are the hard cases that parents will go anywhere if they can find a school that will do that. And so there'll be a great incentive, and I think there'll be a marketplace for that. That's actually the kind of school that I think is the most interesting to run, because bright students can learn no matter how much you handicap them. But students who need help need every incentive in the right place to be able to help them learn.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have one final segment with David Murata here on The Shilling Show talking about universal school choice, now the law in Nevada. Who will be following? We'd love to hear from you. 977-1070. We'll be back. One more segment with David Murata here on The Shilling Show. Nine seven seven 1070. Final segment with David Murata on the universal school choice now available in Nevada. The law was signed in by Governor Brian Sandoval, and it was a party line vote. I love the Washington Post, who did a piece on this, kind of a hit piece on all this. But here's a quote from the article: Democrats, teachers' unions, public school superintendents, and administrators are alarmed, saying that the Nevada law to provide private school vouchers is the first step toward dismantling the nation's public schools. Well, it may or may not be. I would think that would actually be a good thing, because I think the public schools have been a disaster in America. Not that you couldn't have them, but their monopoly has been. But I love how they just lump Democrats in there, with all these other subgroups, as if there's no free-thinking Democrat who would possibly support this. But maybe they're right. I mean, it was, after all, a complete party-line vote. Not one elected Democrat in Nevada supported this.
Yeah, it's interesting. My favorite constitutional right is in the Netherlands, and it's the right to education.
Uh-huh.
And the Netherlands has a law that says that any money spent on education has to be given to parents to spend however they want. And their law includes the ability to have parochial schools, private schools, public schools, whatever. And every child has a voucher, and they call it the right to education, and it's written in their constitution. That's a right that didn't make it into our Constitution, but I think had our founding fathers thought about what was going to happen, they would have put that right in there as well.
Absolutely. Let's go to some of the questions that have been raised by opponents of this. and talk about those. So I'm going to let you kick off the list here.
Yeah, this was written by somebody who's an academic educator, and his list of questions were concerns that he had regarding the Nevada law, and I just thought they were funny because they're questions that are never asked about the existing public school system. The first one was, who is participating? And he says it's mostly middle-income or more affluent families, and how will this work for disadvantaged children from disadvantaged background? What's interesting is that currently the way you're assigned to a school is boundaries drawn as much as possible to keep certain people out of your school district as they are to keep some people in your school district. And every time they try to change the boundaries in Charlottesville, think about the backlash they get and the anger they get of, like, I don't want my kid to go to that school.
Absolutely.
So disadvantaged students now are simply drawn into disadvantaged schools, and they have, I think, the worst situation possible. At least now they'll have money they can take across the street, and their money's as good as anyone else's, and they can get it just as good as education as anyone else can with the money. So the who is participating is everyone is participating now rather than just the few whose parents can afford buying into good neighborhoods. My guess is if we did that in Charlottesville, some neighborhoods' value is simply because their value is jacked up simply because that keeps disadvantaged students out of the neighborhood and out of the school systems. And so the elitism of certain neighborhoods might go down, and maybe the value of certain neighborhoods might drop a little bit. That's an unintended consequence, but I think it would be a good one.
You know, just parenthetically here, Charlottesville allows Albemarle students to have school choice within Charlottesville. If you live in Albemarle and want to send your kids to one of the six elementary schools that they have here, you can choose. But if you live in Charlottesville, you can't choose. And so they want those students, so they give them this incentive because they raise the test scores up in Charlottesville. But the poor suckers that live here who pay for all of it full freight, they don't get that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. The second question that this person asks is, what is the quality of the providers? And the interesting thing is, it doesn't matter. Now parents get to judge the quality of the providers. I'm sure we'll have some bad private schools. We have some bad public schools. That's not the point. Now, parents have an option when they're in a bad school.
They can vote with their money.
They can. What assistance, if any, will the state and others provide to help families navigate the choice landscape? I love that question. Oh, heavens, well, let's not have choice if it's going to be difficult to choose. I hope people have a difficult choice because there's so many good schools that they're not sure which one to send their kid to.
An embarrassment of riches.
Yes, exactly. How will families use the money? You know, I just think it's interesting, you know, which schools will attract the most students, the best schools, hopefully, you know, what online offerings will be the most popular, you know, the best. We don't need to answer those questions because parents will be answering those questions for us. And then is the state money good enough for educational options? You know, certainly it's not under a monopoly. It's not, you know, Nevada currently ranks in the bottom 10. So I don't think it's that great an experiment. And then I love his quote. It's like, well, some private schools cost $24,000. Well, that's true. Some private schools do. Some private schools cost less than the current option, and kids will have money left over to buy books and computers and other supplies. So I don't think that's a big deal. And then the rest of the choices, you know, the questions are all under the assumption that centralized planning is important. What, if any, research is planned, and how will the state pay for it to understand that the program is working? They don't spend anything to do much on public schools. And the best part about this is the point of free markets is that when you crowdsource it, everybody makes those decisions, and you don't need centralized planners to try to rate schools and to figure out which ones are doing the best.
Can't wait to see what happens, but what a great step for liberty. David Murata is online at muratahonmoney.com, and thanks so much for bringing some good news to us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, so that's going to wrap the first hour of the Shilling Show. We come back on the other side with open phones.